from the 2RPH network, welcome to AbleQuest. In this fortnightly series, we'll be looking at developments in assistive technology for people with all kinds of disabilities. And we begin with a two-part feature on NeuroSwitch: what it is, how it works, and a look at who can benefit from it. In this first part, Barbara Sullivan talks to the developer Peter Sean Ford, and also to Naomi McLaughlin, whose late husband Nick, a motor neuron disease sufferer, was an early user and consultant. To begin this program, Barbara Sullivan asked Peter Sean Ford to explain what is meant by assisted technology.
There's an area of rehabilitation technology called assistive technology, AT, and that's a range of material, both software and hardware, designed to enable people with disabilities to write sentences, have the sentences spoken out aloud, go on the internet, do all the kinds of things that we take for granted. And most of those programs are interfaced by the person doing a physical act or a muscular act. For example, pressing a button in a press switch. Sometimes they're called jelly bean switches because they're brightly colored. Or sipping or puffing on a straw called sip and puff or pneumatic switch. Or moving their finger, for example, near a sensor, a proximity sensor, so that whenever they move it through there, they get an on switch. All of these different switches require a physical movement activity by the user, and they're very effective. They're used widely around the world. But for people who have extreme disabilities, who can't move a finger or can't sip and puff on a straw, or who can't even move a finger in front of a proximity switch, for people with this degree of disability, there was nothing else until NeuroSwitch. What NeuroSwitch does is, instead of actually requiring a movement of a muscle, we go inside the muscle and find the electrical signal inside it. It's a potential drop, which is created as a nerve travels from the brain down the neural pathway to the muscle and hits the muscle. This potential drop is created across the muscle as the muscle starts to activate. And even if the muscle doesn't work properly, for example, if a hand is completely paralyzed, we can intercept that signal upstream in the arm, pretty much the way they used to tap telephone lines. That's the EMG signal, electromyograph signal we tap into, and we use that as a switch instead of the actual muscle movement. So even if the hand doesn't move, when somebody wants to press a switch, we can intercept the signal which would normally make the hand move in the muscle and use that signal, the electrical signal, as a switch instead of the physical movement.
So what you're saying is the difference with the NeuroSwitch, apart from the fact that it works when others may not, is that once they're wired up, the user becomes the switch themselves.
They stop thinking about having to hit one of those switches or use a sip and puff straw or move in near a proximity switch or move their eyes in a certain way for eye sensing switches. Exactly. Once they are wired in, and you'll get to see what that's like, once that cable's in, that signal's there. So all you have to do is send it from a brain down to the muscle. And you very quickly, in a matter of minutes, stop thinking about making the signal, as we don't think about moving our hands. When we pick up a glass, for example, we just think about picking up the glass. A user using NeuroSwitch gets into pretty much the same mindset. If they want to make a cursor move on the screen, if they want to click a certain letter or a word or a phrase or launch a program, they're looking at the results of the action. They're not thinking anymore about how they send that signal down. So they, in effect, become the switch.
Why do you refer to what you do as bionic rather than simply biofeedback?
The initial technology we used was actually used for biofeedback. And biofeedback basically is the relationship between a user and a mechanism, say a computer program, where if the program puts up a certain cue, for example, a picture or a sound, then the user responds with a signal and then the computer program or the device responds accordingly. So, for example, if you want to turn a light switch on, if the computer puts the image of a light bulb that's switched off on the screen and you make a switch and then the light bulb comes on, that can be called a biofeedback relationship. Mm-hmm. You're responding to something that the computer gives you and then you biofeedback to it with your own response. The reason why we call this bionics is because NeuroSwitch doesn't just set up that relationship, but it also analyzes a signal 20 times a second, so that for somebody, for example, who has a motor neuron disease, where they're going into very high rates of fatigue, the same kind of fatigue you have after a big lunch on a summer day, that fatigue hits maybe 20 times a day. And as soon as they start doing that, the signal characteristic changes. With a bionic relationship, the computer actually recognizes that and responds within a 20th of a second to that signal change. So the computer is actually in a relationship with the user where it's actually adjusting its own behavior even before they get the result they want, so that they can stay in a good connection with the user and the user doesn't have to change their behavior through a fatigue state to get the computer to respond and communicate and put text up or launch a program, for example.
Now, the mission statement of Controlled Bionics is not so much about technology, but more about human values.
Yeah, one of the first and most driving influences in developing this technology was not so much to focus on the technology, but to focus on the outcome. When a person gets a disability, especially a severe one, they become very dependent on other people for all kinds of things, feeding, care, hygiene, all the kinds of physical functions that people take for granted. Suddenly, somebody with a disability has to rely on another human to do that. And to a large degree, even if they're very well adjusted going in, there's a sense that they're losing independence, they're losing dignity, they're losing a sense of self-esteem. And that can arguably have an influence on their overall well-being and even health. What I wanted to do with the technology was create a system which would help them counter that. So instead of being totally dependent, they would be able to control things such as text, speech, internet, even movement. For example, we've had a NeuroSwitch user here in Sydney who controlled a powered wheelchair with it. So the primary drive in the mission statement was to develop the best technology possible, but its purpose was to enhance the dignity, the self-esteem, and the independence of the person using it.
On 2RPH stations, this is AbleQuest. We've seen what NeuroSwitch is. Now we turn our attention to actual use of this technology. Here's Barbara Sullivan.
I spoke to Naomi McLaughlin, whose husband Nick was diagnosed with motor neurone disease. Nick used NeuroSwitch towards the end of his life when communication became difficult. Naomi, why did you and Nick decide to use NeuroSwitch?
Well, Barbara, it was a combination of a few things. Firstly, Nick was naturally a very smart man, and he was intellectually very interested in technology, robots, electronics, and new inventions. Nick had initially spent many months scrolling through the internet, just searching for various technologies that might have been on the internet to help him later on, when he knew very well what the disease would take from him. And while he was doing this, he came across a site that was written by Peter Ford about NeuroSwitch. And I think it's important to mention just at this time, though, Nick had an outstanding physician. He's a world-renowned neurology consultant, and he's considered one of the best in the world in his field of motor neuron disease and Parkinson's disease, Professor Dominic Rowe. Dom had arranged a meeting at Royal North Shore Hospital for us to meet Peter Ford, and we met with him at Royal North Shore Hospital to see what NeuroSwitch was all about. From that time onwards, Peter and Nick had spent many times together over the 4 to 5 years while NeuroSwitch was being developed. And I just wanted to mention here that more and more people who work with MND clients, they firmly recommend that NeuroSwitch should be offered early in their disease continuum. While it's really daunting to get your head around not being able to speak, it will save people from buying other very expensive forms of technology, especially when they become inoperative.
And how did it actually help Nick?
Well, it was invaluable for many reasons, especially communication. Overall, it gave Nick a sense of control over his own life, and it gave him independence and a sense of equality in his own right. Despite him being completely paralysed, and in the end he was unable to talk or communicate, but he was a smart operator and a very lateral thinker, and he was able to see the benefits of NeuroSwitch early in his disease. Nick was able to use NeuroSwitch using other devices to operate his wheelchair, and he was able to use NeuroSwitch to tip his chair back, so it was able to relieve some of the pressure of his sacral area to prevent pressure sores. And he was also able to raise his legs, just to stretch out his legs, and when you're paralysed, apparently it's just lovely to be able to straighten your legs. And he was able to use a European device called a PROG, which you can put infrared information through remotes. So he was able to turn the TV on and could run the air conditioner. And he also operated his electric bed using the NeuroSwitch. and the environmental controls. But by far the most important was his ability to communicate using, he used Bluetooth to send text messages, and he was able to email, and I've got an example of one here.
Would you like to read that?
This is an email that Nick wrote to me a few months before he died. And it says,
when he was really incapable of doing anything else.
Yeah, that's right. He couldn't do anything, but he was able to write this. And the subject was, love you. Love you, you do great job looking after us. We are survivors and done fantastic. I don't want us stalling. Not a day goes past that I don't think of you in a life not your choosing. It's time we think out the box. I drink liquid food, blended real food. Also, days are gone being scared of going to bed, now exhausted most of the time. I propose a new era. We have knowledge and most equipment. I know how to solve most problems, only a little effort. We can do it. Deepest love and admiration, Nick. Mm. So he was able to write that to me, you know.
And he traded in shares up to a fairly late stage, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He was share trading, right up until months before he died, because he was able to operate his TV and send text messages to his broker, and he was also able to run his foundation, not right to the end, but certainly he had the ability to still, you know, organise people in his foundation.
He seemed to have a very active mind, obviously. I understand that his input and yours was important in fine-tuning the product, NeuroSwitch.
Oh, well, that's right, Barbara, because as I mentioned, we met Peter Ford early in the evolution of NeuroSwitch, and because of the way Nick would think, between the two of them, Nick being the practical user and needer of the technology, and Peter had the, the inventive mind frame to put things on, you know, computer code and so forth. Between them, they were able to develop this, you know, incredible technology that it is today. So they worked together, you know, developing this. And I believe some of the program is actually written with Nick's name incorporated into it, I believe.
And so Nick was obviously technically fairly savvy. Do you think you need to be technologically very competent to use NeuroSwitch?
The support that Peter Ford and his company and his training manuals and the support that's given through the company to learn and troubleshoot and so forth is outstanding, next to none. So I would see most people that might have a lower aptitude to such technology would soon learn fast, I do believe.
I imagine that Nick's ability to communicate right up to the end made a really big difference to you both emotionally. Can you explain how you felt?
The most important aspect of two human beings living together, to be able to communicate everything that you want to say, everything from what you want done to you, how you want things to proceed, to just have your own control with your medical management, you know, how you might want to die. You know, it's invaluable what communication. The ability to be able to communicate with someone who has not the ability is paramount. Mm. Yeah, I firmly believe that.
What do you think about the pricing? I understand it's around $17,000.
I'd just like to say that from somebody who's who was told that it, right in the beginning, it does cost over $100,000 a year to live with motor neuron disease. I thought, oh, that can't be the case. But having lived through it for 7 years, that is an understatement. One of the most important things, which is communication, to only cost $17,000, I think it's a very reasonable price. I can't put it any other way.
This has been AbleQuest. In this program, you've heard Peter Sean Ford, NeuroSwitch developer, and Naomi McLaughlin, whose late husband Nick used the technology. The interviewer was Barbara Sullivan. In our next program, we continue our look at NeuroSwitch, where Barbara Sullivan is wired up and actually performs some simple tasks using the technology. That's next time on AbleQuest.